The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh with you on the show this morning. We're here until 12 noon, as the name suggests. It's the 29th of October. It's Tuesday. We're 2 days away from the big day. Halloween, of course, is Thursday evening, the 31st. And as the news story said there, let's all have a really enjoyable and safe one this year. The lines are open, of course. You can text or WhatsApp us on 086-6025000. Whatever issues are perturbing you or occupying your mind at the moment, let us know. Give us your thoughts on the issues of the day, or indeed the issues you'd like to see put on the agenda and discussed. We're coming up to an election, of course, and that's going to more and more dominate the way we're thinking at the moment. So what are the issues we need to be talking about? There will inevitably be election talk over the course of the programme today. It's inevitable. Every programme now from now until the end of November is going to have some sort of content in it which will be related to elections. That's just the nature of the business. So let us know what you want to see on the agenda. Let us know what you want to see people discussing and raising in the course of their deliberations. You can, of course, call us at 074-912-5000. Caroline taking your calls and producing this morning. Shannon taking your calls as well. Also looking after the social media end of things here on the 9 till noon show and beyond. You can email us comments@highlandradio.com. We're on social media, of course. It's at Highland Radio on X. We're Highland Hub on Facebook. You can interact, of course, with the show on our Facebook pages. You can watch the show unfold. We'll have some Zoom guests and guests in studios over the course of the programme. You can watch that unfold on your screens as well as listening. We have, of course, the Garda Community Information slot coming up after 10 o'clock. So you can watch that as it unfolds and other elements of the programme as well. You can interact with the programme, as we say, on our Facebook pages, Highland Radio, Highland Radio News and Sport. Also, you can watch it on YouTube. It's available on Highland Radio Ireland on YouTube, which you can access, of course, as Greg would say, on your Fire Stick or your smart speaker, or your, well, not your smart speaker, on your smartphone or your TV or whatever form of IT gizmo is your gizmo of choice. Let's look at some of the stories which are in the papers today. Irish Independent this morning. Looking inside, and I did reference that the election will be coming up, and there's going to be talk about that, of course, obviously, over the course of the programme. But a story on the inside of the Independent this morning. Election candidates can now spend 29% more as limits are raised. There's an increase in the thresholds, which Senan Maloney is suggesting could actually favour the larger and richer parties. The impending election will be the most expensive in Irish history by a margin of millions after a quiet inflation-related move by a government minister. The thresholds for spending have been increased by almost 30%. Individual limits have been raised to 38,900 in a three-seater constituency, 48,600 in a four-seater, and in a five-seater like Donegal, each candidate can now spend 58,350 euro. There are also pro-rata increases in the level of expenses that may be covered by the state for reimbursement on election spending, and each candidate can now claim up to 11,200 euro back. Another story inside is Sean O'Farrell, the outgoing Cairn Corda. He's confirmed he will not be seeking to return to the chair of Dáil Éireann. He will be, he says, returning to the backbenches. The Cairn Corda, of course, the only person who is guaranteed to return to the next Dáil. He is automatically returned. He doesn't have to stand for election because he's been in the chair for the past few years. I think his seat is in Kildare. Yeah, Kildare South. So he is the only person automatically returned to the next Dáil. Everybody else from the Taoiseach up has got to seek to take their seat back, or if they're vacating, try and ensure a successor from their own party or perspective. But Sean O'Farrell is saying no, he will not be seeking re-election to the chair. The name of Catherine Connolly being suggested as someone who could slit in as the Cairn Corda. Now, she has been an absolutely superb last Cairn Corda. We in the newsroom would be watching a couple of hours Dáil coverage a day on a routine basis, and very often Catherine Connolly as last Cairn Corda will be in the chair, and I have to say she is a superb last Cairn Corda. There's a part of me, I would have to say, if she were to become the Cairn Corda, I think she'd be a huge loss, actually, because Catherine Connolly is one of the most loquacious, intelligent and I think, evocative contributors to Dáil Éireann. She's an absolutely superb contributor to the Dáil. I think she'd be an awful loss, actually, if she were to become the Cán Comhairle, because that we would then be denied that voice in the Dáil, and her voice is a really good. She's actually well worth... She routinely gets awards of the Parliamentarian of the Year among political correspondents, and it's absolutely easy to understand why. Also, in The Independent this morning, on the front page, indeed, if we just flick back to the front, an interesting story. Rate of 0.5% for widow gives hope to mortgage prisoners. And Pepper Finance, which manages mortgages owned by Vulture Funds, has been forced to give a 55-year-old widow a new 36-year mortgage at an interest rate of just 0.5%. The development is significant, and the paper suggests it offers hope to thousands of mortgage prisoners whose loans were sold to funds. It's a fraction of anything available in the market. Mary Taylor, who was in arrears on her home in Clonmel in Tipperary, will be 91 by the time her new mortgage term ends. There's a full report on that on the inside of the paper. I'm sure it's covered in other papers as well. But that is a very interesting one indeed, that story on today's Irish Independent. Looking at the inside of the Irish Times, deal paves the way for hiring more Kenyan nurses. Now, I was involved in a conversation with some friends at an event yesterday, and we were discussing the difference between nurse recruitment 30 years ago and nurse recruitment now. And there was a situation 30 years ago where it was actually quite difficult to get a full-time job as a staff nurse, and you went on a panel, and there could be a panel of 40 nurses working on a temporary stroke agency basis on call, as it were, hoping to be offered a full-time position at Letterkenny University Hospital, General Hospital, of course, as it was at the time. How the situation has changed right across the health service. Now the Dáil and the Department of Health have put in place measures which will see more nurses brought into Ireland from Kenya. Minister Stephen Donnelly says he's aware the loss of key health personnel could be an issue for less wealthy countries, but the Irish and Kenyan governments, he says, will work on a deal that will be ethical and in line with World Health Organization's and OECD guidelines as well. So we could be seeing more Kenyan nurses in our hospitals in the not-too-distant future. Also in the Times today, local residents hold vigil in Dundalk for missing schoolboy. The horrific story of Kyron Dernan and what may have happened to him continues to unfold. There have been several searches over the past number of weeks, and still mystery as to what has happened to Kyron. But the sad presumption at this point in time is that he is deceased, and that the search is a search for a body. And a vigil over the weekend in Dundalk, a very sad event indeed. Budget aftermath and state spending. The Times tell us top voter interest in snapshot poll, with potentially less than a fortnight until a general election is called. And in the aftermath of Budget 2025, government spending and the budget are the main topics to capture voter attention. That's a snapshot poll carried out by the Irish Times and Ipsos. And you can read more about that in your Irish Times if you so choose. Interesting story on the inside of the Irish Daily Mail, and it's one that's caught my eye. And full disclosure, let's be upfront about this. I am involved in Letterkenny Musical Society's production in March of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. There was mayhem, we're told, as Wonka star Timothée Chalamet crashes his own lookalike contest. The lookalike contest was taking place to find out who looked most like Willy Wonka. But it was happening at Washington Park Square in New York City, and Timothée Chalamet actually arrived at the contest. He's not believed to have entered it, and he made a quick exit, but he just appeared, got recognised, created a big stir, and then disappeared again. I must say, when I first saw this story, I was rather hoping that what we would get would be a repeat of that classic situation that developed many, many years ago. And we all know, if you ever ask anyone, give me one fact about Charlie Chaplin, almost inevitably one of the things that will come up is he once came third in a Charlie Chaplin lookalike competition. Now, mind you, he came third in a Charlie Chaplin lookalike competition at a time when people didn't have a hunk of plastic in their pocket on which they could access pictures of everybody in the whole world at the touch of a button. And, you know, that wouldn't have happened back then, but it's an interesting one. The front page of the Daily Mail, a very sobering story, and we go from the trivial to the very, very serious indeed. 53 children have died on Tuzla's watch, and that's just in the past 3 years, as pressure mounts for the state agency to appear before an Oireachtas committee. And Ciarán Dernan, we referenced him on an earlier story. Again, he's just one of 53 children to have died while on the radar of the state's Child and Family Agency, TUSLA, in the past 3 years. And pressure is mounting on Minister Rodrigo Gorman and TUSLA to appear before an Oireachtas committee to be grilled on the safety and protection of those who come under the agency's remit. That story on the Irish Daily Mail. Also there, outrage at TV station comparing Trump rally to 1939 Nazi event. And one of the most awful things about this election campaign in the States at the moment is the extent to which everything is now polarised. I mean, if you look at our election campaigns, there'll be genuine debates in which people will take differing points and they'll have different political perspectives and they'll argue their point from a left-leaning or a right-leaning point of view or a centrist point of view or whatever. But we don't have this situation here where you're either so far to the left you're in Cork or so far to the right you're in wherever. You know, it seems to be just in the States awful. So depending now on whether the media you consume is blue or red, Trump did hold a rally in Madison Square Garden over the weekend. Now, it would appear that some of the comments made and some of the themes raised, particularly in terms of Puerto Ricans, were rather distressing. And, you know, if you're leaning toward blue, it was an absolute terrible atrocity. If you're leaning toward red, it was a magnificent statement of how America is going to be great again. And the problem appears to be that middle completely disappearing, which is a very sad thing to see. But that rally took place. Well, I presume it's the Madison Square Garden rally it's referring to. I'm making that presumption. Let's go to the tabloids. Irish Daily Mirror this morning. OAP's motorway trip in his wheelchair goes viral online. This is the moment a pensioner was spotted cruising the wrong way down a busy motorway in a wheelchair. Footage shared on Sunday shows the elderly man moving along the central reservation of the N7 at Newlands Cross on the outskirts of Dublin. Now, immediately, the pedant in me. Now, I would know that road fairly well, actually, because that's when you come off the M50 driving from the northwest down to Waterford. You go, you get M1, M50, N7, get off of the Red Cow off the M50, N7, straight down M7, M9, and then you're in Waterford. So I know that road quite well. And the spot they're referring to, okay, let's be pedantic, it's not a motorway. It is what we would have called in the past the Naistewell Carriageway. And it's still a very, very busy road. And how you actually get into that central reservation on a wheelchair, I have no idea. But it's a scary, scary picture if you look at it. And that is a scary, scary road. I mean, I do know that road, as I say. I would travel it quite often. I'll be on it next weekend as it happens. And I would not like to be doing anything even vaguely dangerous on that road. Interesting one too, if you're a soccer fan. Everyone knows, of course, that Erik ten Hag, the Man United manager, got the boot yesterday. Keen the man for United fans. Now, maybe is this wishful thinking on the part of a Mirror journalist? I don't know, because I've not seen Roy Keane's name crop up anywhere else. There's other names being mentioned right, left and centre. I've not heard Keane's name, but apparently Man United fans are calling for Roy Keane to replace Erik ten Hag following his sacking yesterday. Sunday's 2-1 loss to West Ham was the Red Devils' fourth Premier League defeat of the season, and they've won only one of their last 8 games in all competitions. And they're saying there is speculation that Roy Keane is going to get the job. It's the only place I've seen that speculation. Perhaps that speculation is elsewhere. I don't know. Actually, funnily enough, on the other two tabloids, The Sun and The Star, Ten Hag is the main story. Looking at the Irish Sun this morning, Ten Hag flies off with €80 million and the Man United gilet he won for his last game. Apparently, Ten Hag got the sack yesterday morning at around about... he was told around about 9 or so. It was announced at around about 10 minutes to midday. And by all accounts, Erik ten Hag was on a private jet flying back to Holland by about 10 past 2 with around about €18 million as a payoff in his pocket as a result. They're now looking at the odds as to who's going to be the new United manager. 6-1 on is Ruben Amorim, who's the Sporting Lisbon manager. 6-1 is interim boss Ruud van Nistelrooy. Gareth Southgate, formerly of England, 10-1. Xavi, formerly of Barcelona, 14-1. Now, the interesting one, and the person I thought might have been offered the gig, is Thomas Frank of Brentford. Now, he's on 12-1. I thought he'd have been actually... his odds would have been shorter than 12-1. But I know very little about these things, and I'm sure the Ruben Amorim at 6-1 on is not someone taking a guess. That's based very much on information that somebody has from sources very close. Final look at the Irish Daily Star this morning, one that caught my eye. Sometimes film reboots can be disasters. Sometimes they can really work. The Naked Gun is getting a reboot. Now, we know that Leslie Nielsen was absolutely fantastic in The Naked Gun and the follow-ups, 2.5 and 3 1/3. And he was really, really good. And if you're going to replace Leslie Nielsen as a Frank Drebin in The Naked Gun, you've got to do it with someone special. And the new Naked Gun apparently is all based on the exploits of Frank Drebin's son, Frank Jr. And Frank Drebin Jr. is being played by Liam Neeson. Now, Neeson has mastered, to my mind, the idea of playing a comedic straight man with an absolutely straight face, completely straight-laced, straight down the middle, and he's absolutely hilarious. If ever you watch the Extras programme with Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant, Liam Neeson does a piece in that with Gervais where Liam Neeson goes in and talks about how he wants to do stand-up comedy. And he is as straight as a die. There is not a flicker of expression on Neeson's face. And the straighter he is, the funnier it gets. It's an absolutely brilliant piece of TV. So if you want to see what Liam Neeson's chops are as a straight guy, just watch that clip of Extras with Ricky. It's all over YouTube. You'll find it anywhere. You're listening to the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. You'll be aware that over the years, Japanese knotweed and giant hogweed and giant rhubarb have been issues in many parts of Donegal, and Donegal County Council issued advice in the past to people to look, don't touch it. We're looking at it. We're trying to get a countywide strategy for dealing with this particular problem. However, one local councillor believes that not enough is being done to deal with the problem, and it's becoming a huge issue. Councillor Michael McLafferty, good morning.
Morning, Donal. Morning, listeners.
Talk to us about knotweed here.
With knotweed, Donal, as you know, there, it's a very invasive plant as such, and sadly, the thing about it is, wherever it may be, and a failing along the road, so on, etc., it needs to be treated, needs to be sprayed. In the first instance, now, the difficulty the council have, they do spray what they can along the roads, but then the other situation is then if they're spraying along the road and it extends into private land, then they can't go into the private land to extend it to spray it and whatever's put in the field as such. So that's a problem that way. But I believe a policy change needs to happen here for the likes of the Japanese knotweed, the giant rhubarb, the giant hogweed, etc. Wherever the council may come on it or who know along the road or such, and if it's in your field, that they need to have authority to get into the field as well and spray the field, because I believe there's no point spraying along the road if you're not catching what's in the field as well. Also, the danger as well here, Donal, as well, and the knotweed for the minute. For example, if that's growing along fields along rivers and that then as well, which it is in places, the seeds or whatever, then two things will happen. The seeds can blow away, seeds can be carried away by birds, etc. Seeds can get washed down the river. If they get washed down the river, it can travel God knows kilometres on end alongside that. It can get stuck down on the sides of the riverbeds, or the river bank, sorry, and we've a real mess then altogether of getting it treated in because of the water and everything else. I understand when that happens, then you're looking at the possibilities then of possibly injecting it, something I'm not familiar with, but apparently that's how you do it. And also another thing I'm not familiar with as well, but I've heard about it or learned about it, just not sure, fully sure how it's implemented, but there's some way of electrocuting it as well as such. Yeah. I don't know what way that's carried out. I presume that's possibly not possible when there's water beside you, but otherwise that is a form of dealing with it as well, although I'm not familiar with the workings of it, but I've been told about that.
From the point of view of landowners, Michael, I can fully understand if I were a landowner and I wanted to plant, be it crops or whatever, on my land, or if I were a private landowner I wanted to plant flowers or whatever, I'd be very loath to say to the council, yes, come in and spray something on my land, unless I knew exactly what they were spraying, where they were putting it, and if it was going to have any impact on present or future planting that I'd be doing.
Oh, yes, 100%, of course, that's the way it'll be. But I suppose, like, going forward, the way it would need to be, like, all of this would have been crashed out properly. If it's on your land, the council and obviously notify you that it's on your land. Hence, when they'll be spraying along the roads and so on, they'll see it. And obviously, it stretches from the road there into your field, they'll have to say to you. So I suppose there's an owner as well, and a landowner as well, to be responsible as well. If they genuinely know it's on their field or on their land or up their lane or whatever the case may be, to treat it as well, to get it sprayed or whatever needs to be done as well with it, to save it from going onto the neighbour's land or neighbouring streams or anything else. And also the Japanese knotweed as well, Donald, that gets into concrete or gets into tar macadam. It can wreak havoc with your concrete and your tar macadam. Tar macadam, obviously, in your streets. Your concrete, it could be in your street as well, or your house. Gets into seams in your cracks in your house, so that can play havoc as well, I've been told. It can actually just grow out and bust things. And before you know it, then you have the problem is there then before you realise it. As one person pointed out there some time ago, they had Japanese knotweed growing beside them, and they were panicking. They were selling their house at the time, and they were afraid it was going to devalue the price of their house. So now they managed to get negotiations done, and they got the whole area that the knotweed was unsprayed. It didn't belong to them, but it was adjacent to them, so they managed to get it sprayed. So that cleared that end of it up.
And now, we know in the past, the council's advice in the past, as I recall it, the council's advice was, do nothing, don't touch it, and we're coming up with a strategy and we're going to deal with it. Is it time for the council to revisit that and, if necessary, put out a revised message that says to people, look, if you have Japanese knotweed, you can spray it with whatever, and you can use this or this treatment to deal with the Japanese knotweed? Because I know they were concerned that people might use the wrong weed killers, people might use the wrong mixtures, and if so, they could exacerbate rather than resolve the problem. So is it time for the council to change its advice to give more autonomy to people to deal with it as they see it?
Yeah, it needs to be revisited. Something I'm going to bring up again, Donald, on there is with the council, that we do need to revisit it again properly. That we do need to revisit it properly and get the word out there again, get a proper strategy in place, because I believe if we don't, things are getting well out of hand here at the moment again with Japanese knotweed, giant rhubarb in places, and also the giant hogweed, which in its own brings its own difficulties. That can actually burn you, such, and scare you as well. You need medical treatment with that, such. The giant hogweed, that's a huge big, it is what it is, just a giant big plant that speaks for itself.
And finally, Michael, we know, as I said, if I recall correctly, it was in around about 6-7 years ago, there was a real focus on this from the point of view of Donegal County Council, and they were getting very concerned at the level, particularly of Japanese knotweed, that was being seen in the county. Now, 7 years on from that, from your observation and from your knowledge of being on council, is that still a major issue? Has it been partially resolved? Is it as serious as it was? Is it a little less serious than it was? Have we made any impact or dent on what at the time was being characterised as a Japanese knotweed invasion?
Yeah, I would say there's a dent has been put on it, all right, Donald, in fairness and credit to the council, a dent has been. But the dent needs to be put further now on where it's in private land as such. I think that's the need, the flag needs to be carried the whole way as such, totally this time. I believe a dent has been put on it. And most of the roadways and that were possible in public ownership, but on private stuff it's appearing, and that's where the dent needs to be put finally into that.
Yeah.
Alongside the giant hogweed, wherever it may be, and the giant rhubarb as well, obviously.
Yeah. Councillor Michael McLaverty, listen, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. It's always interesting to hear about how dents are being made and how more needs to be done, though. So obviously you'll be raising this at council level. I'm sure people on council are on top of this, and they'll be able to share what perspectives they have as well. If anybody out there has any other perspectives on this. And I suppose the advice really would be to people, look, if you don't know what you're doing at the moment, don't do anything. Seek advice and make sure that whatever you're doing is the right thing to do, because one thing you don't want to do is use the wrong materials, take the wrong strategy, and actually make the problem worse. But Michael, for the moment, listen, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Donald. Much appreciated. Take care. Thank you.
You too, Michael. Take care. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donald Kavanagh with you on the show this morning. Now, The downgraded homeowners group is lodging a formal complaint with regards to the defective concrete block scheme. The scheme is based on the IS 465 standard that is, it's believed, deeply flawed and is being labelled not fit for purpose by highly respected professionals, raises serious questions relative to the situation. Now, we know that there's a long-standing political belief, particularly here in Donegal, that at the moment the policy at department level is not following the science and the decisions are being made to downgrade homes based on information that does not take everything into account, in particular, does not take into account the importance of sulphate attack and corrosive defects such as pyrotite. Joined on the line by Marty McElhenney, who is spokesperson for the Donegal Downgraded Homeowners Group. Marty, good morning.
Good morning, Donal. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us this morning.
It's always our pleasure, Marty. Marty, we know that this has been, and this programme, the news in the Dáil indeed, on several occasions over the past number of months, the issue of downgrading has been discussed. And it always comes down to the same basic claim. And if we were to sum up that claim in five words, that claim would be the government isn't following the science.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the government have directed the housing agency to look at the cause of the deterioration of our homes. They are saying in the ministerial guidelines that the housing agency will, in their analysis and deliberation, take into consideration the presence of pyrotite. This is really important because we have a group of 70 downgraded homeowners. Every single one of us have pyrotite in the blocks of our home. And every single downgrade decision has been based on the now disproven hypothesis that it's mica and freeze-thaw causing the deterioration of our home. This has been completely ignored. Pyrotite has not been considered. And our big problem is that the remediation of dwellings damaged by the use of defective concrete block Act 2022, it directs that the ministerial guidelines are adhered to. We want to know why pyrotite has not been considered in our downgrade decisions, why the true cause of the deterioration of our homes have been ignored. And we have emailed numerous complaints, and we continue to do so over the next few days, to the programme manager of the Defective Concrete Block Scheme, CCNN, all relevant parties, including Minister Dara O'Brien, asking who has been responsible for this? Why has it been allowed to continue? We have been shouting about this for so long now. Every single downgrade decision is wrong because the cause has been put down to the now disproven mica freeze-thaw and pyrotite. The true cause, internal sulphate attack, is at play in the home, in the blocks of our home, and that is the pyrotite is causing it. And we are livid that no one is listening to us, and we want this looked into.
Now, we know, as I said, it's been raised on the floor of the Dáil on several occasions by several TDs in Donegal and indeed beyond as well. We also know that it's been raised by people like Paul Dunlop, and there have been papers published and there have been conferences held, and we've spoken to Paul Dunlop and others, academics that he's worked with as well, and particularly the most recent report, which is damning in terms of the impact and effects of pyrotite, and also on the issue of foundations, which I know is also one that people are very concerned about because at present they're not taken into account when decisions are being made. And one of the problems with this appears to be that effectively engineers are being pitted against engineers, because if you're an engineer who's working for the housing agency, you're working off a different standard and you're working off a different priority and protocol to an engineer that might be hired by a homeowner. And if one contradicts the other, the worry at the moment is that the contradiction is going to come to the detriment of the homeowners and to the detriment of their homes.
Absolutely. The engineers who are downgrading our homes are basing their decisions on the not fit for purpose, as you stated, IS 465. They are adhering strictly to IS 465. So IS 465 itself doesn't consider pyrotite. But that's no excuse, Donald, because they're engineers. You know, they must take into account all relevant standards. They have to keep up to date with the latest scientific and technological advances. That's not happening. That is no excuse. You cannot blame just the flawed IS 465 for this. They were directed to consider pyrotite. Internal sulphate attack due to the presence of pyrotite has been proven without a doubt to be the cause of the deterioration of Donegal homes. There's no excuse for ignoring this. And we're livid about it, and we feel hopeless. And we need this looked into, and we want this investigated. And we just want to air and shout to anybody who listens, every single decision is wrong.
You're lodging a formal complaint. Who are you lodging that complaint with? And what do you hope is going to happen with it in the short to medium term?
The complaint itself is going to Mr. Pat Espy. He's the programme manager for the Defective Concrete Block Scheme. We have emailed and then, we have CC'd and then obviously Minister Dara O'Brien, it's his ministerial guidelines for the scheme that are being ignored. We have emailed, we've CC'd and Damien Owen. He is the Director General of Engineers Ireland, because we want to make it very clear to him that we did do a protest a couple of months ago. It was a successful protest, but we want it so clear to him these engineers are acting they're just acting in very poor faith towards us, and we want him to know that pyrotite was not considered as well. We're also CCing in then any relevant bodies that we think might look into this complaint for us. And we are hopeful that this will be investigated and proper recourse is given to us. And we know, a lot of us have been on this merry-go-round now for years. Some people have been looking into this issue for over 4 years. We're done with it. You know, our families, we have to be able to move on. These decisions are all based on a discounted hypothesis. We need to be able to move on. The decisions need rescinded, and the original recommendations of the IS465 registered engineers that we were obliged to engage at significant cost, they need reinstated.
Is there a provision within the wording of the scheme and the act governing the scheme that allows for a complaint to be considered in a formal way and to be expedited in the way it's considered? As far as you're aware, what now happens to the complaint in terms of how it's dealt with? Is there a formula there that will allow it be dealt with speedily?
No, we would actually like a wee bit more clarity on this. We've also CC'd in the Ombudsman as well, because we want to see where this is going to go, and we don't want it to be ignored when we have been shouting about it. So for such a long time now, for months we've been shouting about this. So we will follow the complaint as best as we can to get it highlighted, but we need somebody to speak to us. We need somebody to look into these and investigate what we're saying. What we're saying, we know, is the truth.
We know the Coleman legal class action is going ahead, and we're watching obviously carefully what's happening in the legal system with that particular action. Do you hope that maybe that class action may provide some opening as well for this to be considered, given that this issue was an issue that's going to be affecting, I'm sure, many of the people that are listed in that action too?
Yeah, well, one of the downgraded homeowners, an admin for the downgraded homeowners group, has had correspondence with Coleman Legal, and they are very, very interested in speaking with and dealing with the downgraded homeowners. They want any information sent to them. They are watching this very closely, and we're delighted to hear that, because somebody is listening to us, and it is Coleman Legal. We are saying something has gone majorly wrong here. So they are taking an interest in it. And anybody who's not part of our downgraded Facebook group, I'd like to just tell you that if you are a downgraded homeowner, to keep in touch with Coleman Legal.
Finally, Marty, in terms of the issue, and as I say, we have discussed it so often, it's been discussed in the Dáil. It isn't that Dara O'Brien or that Simon Harris or that Micheál Martin aren't aware of it. They are aware of it. They've been told it on numerous occasions by numerous TDs on the floor of the Dáil and elsewhere. I mean, I don't think there can be anyone in Dáil Éireann who hasn't heard of this downgrading issue and hasn't heard the phrase IS465 over and over and over again. Politically, it doesn't seem to be landing. It would appear at this point that maybe, from your point of view, legal is the way to go.
Yeah. We know that they were legally, it was statutory. They should have adhered to this. They should have considered pyrotite, and they did not. We know this is the cause of deterioration of our homes. We've been shouting about this. We have been shouting about this for months. I myself personally have emailed Minister O'Brien. I got a completely inadequate response. My own case, there's clear signs of internal sulphate attack at play in the rising walls of my home, and the housing agency want me to rebuild on these load-bearing walls. They'll crumble and deteriorate, so we can't stop shouting about this. And we're fully prepared to highlight this in whatever way we can. We need this looked at. What's happened here is wrong. These decisions need to be rescinded, and we need to be able to move on with our lives.
And of course, the other issue is, I know, I'm sure for yourself and for many people affected by this, what they want is a home that they can raise a family in, a home that they can grow old in, and a home that's going to be their home for the rest of their lives. In other cases, people may want to sell that house down the line. People may want to move on. People may want, for whatever reason, to put that house on the market. The worry is going to be that if the level of remediation and if the level of work done now is not sufficient, that 10, 15, 20 years down the line, if they want to sell that house, they're going to have a whole raft of other problems, and this is going to come back to bite them.
Absolutely, Donal. The homeowners have done nothing wrong here. We bought and built houses in good faith. What's happened is because there has been a complete lack of regulation and standards enforced in the concrete industry, and this is coming from government. We have done nothing wrong. We should be able to move on. I have a young family. I have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. I want my home rebuilt. I want a safe family home for them to grow up in. And I want, you know, I deserve that. I didn't do anything wrong. This is what is happening. We're left in a horrific situation. You should not treat people like this, and to allow it to continue when we know it is so flawed and there is huge legal questions. We need somebody to stand up. We need something to be done here. And this is what these numerous complaints are about.
Marty McElhenney will be continually watching this one with interest. I have no doubt it'll be raised sooner rather than later on the floor of the Dáil. We could be into the final days of the current Dáil. It'll likely be dissolved when it meets next week, and a new government and a new Dáil will come in the coming months, and I'm sure it's going to be back on the floor there. But in the meantime, you're hoping for some answers, and maybe this will be a route to getting them. In the meantime, Marty, keep in touch, but for now, thank you and goodbye.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Donal. Bye-bye.
That's Marty McElhenney there, spokesperson for the Downgraded Homeowners Group. And as she said, they are active on Facebook. If you're affected by this, maybe go and get involved in that Facebook discussion. And Coleman Legal taking an interest in this, we're told, as well. So that might be one to bear in mind as well. Let's just look at an issue that was raised on the show last week. A message that had come in from a number of parents of children attending Abbey Vocational School in Donegal Town, expressing concern about the cleanliness and unhygienic state of toilets at the school, saying the majority of toilets are actually blocked, filled to the rim with tissue and other products, some male toilet smeared with waste, with liquid and urine on the toilets and the floors, female toilets the same. The smell is horrific. A number of people's children are holding on until they get home. They then rush to the toilet at home as soon as they get in the door. Other children doing the same. A lot of children run down to a local supermarket at break time and lunchtime to use the toilet facilities there. At one point, they were at an event in the school. A young child had to go to the toilet. They brought the child to the toilet but literally couldn't use it. We obviously passed those comments on to the Donegal ATB, and we've had a response from Donegal ATB. Just to read that response for you now. The Abbey Vocational School has almost 1,000 students and over 100 staff. It's a large, thriving and busy school. Caretaking and cleaning staff work very hard every day to keep the building clean and tidy for all. The school has a very large footprint due to its growth and development over recent years. That growth is positive and welcome, but with rapid growth also comes attendant challenges to the school as it strives to provide the best possible education to the whole community of Donegal Town. Donegal ATB, under whose aegis the school operates, is acutely aware of the challenges school face in relation to the appropriate levels of cleaning resources, and to that end is in regular contact with the Department of Education to seek an improvement to the current allocation. The school continues to liaise closely with the ETB in relation to this matter and looks to address all matters of concern as soon as possible. That's the statement, as I say, that we've had from the Abbey Vocational School in Donegal Town. A caller says, I recently had a birthday party in a bar and restaurant. We had a big cake, so I offered some of the cake to the staff. I was shocked when I came home and there was only a fifth of the cake left. Not that big a deal, it's only cake, but it only shows, give an inch and take a mile. Now, we are going to go to Zoom, where we are joined by Minister Alan Dillon. And Minister Dillon is the Minister of State with responsibility for local government and planning. And he's with us this morning to discuss the fact that pensioners and carers in Donegal are set to benefit from the October bonus payment. And we'll go to Zoom now and say, Minister Alan Dillon, good morning.
Good morning, Donal.
Minister, these bonuses that are coming in, being paid in the coming weeks, strategically placed following Budget 2025, important for those in receipt of those benefits?
Really important. And I think today, 4 weeks ago, the government delivered its fifth and final budget. And part of that represented one of the largest social protection budgets in the history of the state, and it comprised of a blend of lump sum payments, but also increases in core payment and a range of targeted supports designed to ensure that we ease the financial pressures on many households who are facing considerable cost inflation. And we know that the cost of living is still a real issue for many people. And that's why this budget, in this budget, we took the necessary decisions to help families, pensioners, carers, and also people with disabilities. So from today, we will see payments now being issued across many measures with a double weekly payment for older people, those in receipt of a pension, a double payment for carers and people with disability. And that will benefit up to 1.4 million people this week. And we will also see a number of similar measures now being rolled out in the weeks and months ahead, including a double child payment. And again, throughout the month of November, further supports will be rolled out. There will be a 400 euros disability support grant provided to people with disabilities. There will also be a 400 euros relief payment for those who are in receipt of the working family payment. And up to 200 euro payment will also go to nearly a quarter of a million individuals in receipt of the living alone allowance. So a number of measures. And again, I think Minister Heather Humphreys has rolled out the dates that people will expect these payments to be lodged into their bank accounts. I know in the West and Northwest, an issue that always comes up is the fuel allowance. And that will see an additional lump sum of 300 euros paid out to 387,000 households. And that will be very, very valuable as we enter into the colder months where heating costs will be, we'll see a sharp incline. So government has also expanded the fuel allowance scheme as well, which will make many householders in Donegal or Mayo or Sligo, those who need it most, receive assistance.
In terms of the payments, which are in terms of the double payments, one of the comments made over the weekend by the St. Vincent de Paul Society was that in many cases, it'll bring some temporary relief to those under pressure as a result of the cost of living allowance and as a result of the situation they find themselves in. But the reality is, it's a sticking plaster over a wound that'll be there for 1 week and then it'll be gone again. They're saying in what really should be done is a more targeted, limited situation where those really in need get these double payments for an extended period of time to really give them the chance to break out of the situation they're in. Would the government not be better off targeting to those really in need rather than giving payments across the board in many cases?
Well, certainly this government tried to strike the balance. And as I said earlier, there is a blended approach, one that can ensure that we can be financially prudent, but also targeting at those who need it most. And look, any future cost of living payments will be a matter for the next government. And I respect what St. Vincent de Paul do and their commentary. But I have to say the feedback on the ground, from my perspective and from the people that I've spoke to, the extra payments leading up to Christmas will make a significant difference. I know from talking to my constituents here in Mayo, the double child family or the double child benefit payment has been particularly popular for families. And that's why we're making two of these payments this year. And also in regards to the disability support grant, that's recognising those who need it most with disabilities and the challenges that they face. So while we certainly acknowledge the feedback, we can't predict the situations which people will face into during the next term and what the cost of living challenges will be. But certainly this government has done a good job in driving inflation down to 2%. You know, we had record inflation during this term of government, and we have implemented cost of living supports consecutively over many budgets.
But the problem there, of course, is that the price increases, inflation may be going down, but the price increases that came into effect when inflation was at 9-10%, those prices haven't gone down. Those prices have stayed the same. So the baseline inflation figure is down, but the high prices that kicked in at the height of inflation are still there.
Well, and again, we see the introduction of two energy credits here worth, you know, up to 250 euros that will be released before Christmas. So we are conscious that, to your point, that, you know, the cost of electricity and oil and gas still hasn't decreased to the level that we would wish. And we are extended many other supports around renters tax credit. That has been increased to €1,000. We free public transport for children now under nine. So a number of measures will kick in, and core payments. The pension has been increased by up to €12 as well. And that's across the board on all social welfare payments.
In terms of things like the fuel allowance, would the government maybe not have been better off putting more focus on keeping the excise duties on fuel down? We know, for instance, that a series of three-phased, whether you want to call them excise increases or excise returns to what the rate previously was, but we know three times this year that the rate's gone up over the course of, I think it was earlier in the summer, then it was August, and then it was October, when the actual price of fuel and petrol, et cetera, went up because excise duties were being restored to previous levels. Would that maybe have been a better way that the government should be looking at taxation to keep those down right across the board?
Well, we're always looking at it in the round, and you know, there was a reduction in excise during the real hard inflationary phase, and the government has put it back into its normal rates. But again, coming from a rural constituency, I know the challenges that are faced by motorists, and we are constantly reviewing that. And you know, I think we understand that a lot of people in the West and Northwest are dependent on their cars. And yes, it is an issue. We're trying to increase the reliance trying to incentivize people to actually use public transport, but understand that people are in the West of Ireland and Northwest do require their car. But I think government had decisions to make. I think they felt that these were the appropriate ones at the time. And as I said earlier, it'll be for the next government to decide what changes they look to implement in further budgets into the future.
A caller is asking, do people living alone get double pension as well as living alone payment?
That's correct. That's correct, yeah.
They do. Minister, we know that an election is imminent. We know it's coming before the end of the year. The general consensus would appear to be that the Dáil will be dissolved next week, and that we will go to the polls on November 29th. There's no question, but these increases and these payments are timed nicely on the lead into an election. Is that cynical on the part of the government? And do you think people will treat it as such?
Absolutely not. I think this government has been consistent in terms of its commitment to support those who need it most. And our track record has been one of prioritisation to insulate those on the lowest earning incomes from households who are worst affected from price increases. And I think we would be criticised if we didn't deliver these cost of living measures. And I think the budget builds on the foundation and that we have previously set. And in one sense, it leaves no one behind. And many of the important measures that have been announced in budget will hit people's pockets in the run-up to Christmas, I think, or the winter months. And I think it's really important that we do make a real difference in people's lives, particularly for many families. And I think that's why these payments are coming on stream this week. They'll be very, very much needed by many families. And yes, we'll have an election, I'm sure, in the coming weeks. And I think every party is in preparation mode. And I think, you know, the opposition are the only, if opposition can only speak to, you know, the delivery of these payments at this junction, you know, it's probably, they feel that, you know, this government has, you know, struck the balance correctly in how we actually manage the budget. And as I said earlier, this is one of the largest social welfare packages in the history of the state. And it's been put to good use because people, you know, use their hard-earned taxes, and now we're making sure that these taxes are being put to good use.
Minister Alan Dillon, thank you very much indeed. Time has beaten us. Thank you, and we wish you all the best in the coming weeks.
Thanks, Dawn.